Whether you're an aspiring filmmaker, writer, or podcaster, it's pivotal.
How can we get money for our films? Forget the craft, forget that we know how to do that, but how do we get funding for our films?
Oh yes, the dreaded pitch meeting. That make or break moment when you're trying to convince a studio, network, investor, or even Telus StoryHive or Telus Originals of the value and appeal of your project.
It is so easy to tell stories and make stories, but it's really hard to make a living doing it.
What goes into a winning pitch? How can you be sure you're even pitching to the right person? And what are the mistakes to avoid at all costs? Let's find out.
Welcome to First Frame, brought to you by Telus StoryHive. I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. And we're here to help empower new and emerging Canadian content creators by answering their most pressing questions and getting insights from people who have been down this road before.
On every episode, we unpack the journey of a leading creator or creators all the way from inception to completion.
Canadian content creators need a podcast to call home. And this is it.
So in this episode, I'm excited to explore a topic that can be a little intimidating to even veteran creators. How to craft a perfect pitch that really grabs attention and ultimately gets a green light.
It's a sad reality for Canadian content creators, but funding and support is not easy to come by. That means you have to be really smart about how you pitch, when you pitch, and who you pitch to.
So to give us a crash course, we've reached out to two experts who've been part of countless pitch meetings over the course of their careers.
Our first guest is President and CEO of British Columbia's Knowledge Network, Michelle Van Busicum. Michelle, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
I'm also excited to introduce our colleague, Ken Choi, who's a production executive with Telus Originals. Ken, welcome to First Frame.
Happy to be here.
Before we dive into today's discussion, let's learn a little bit about each of your backgrounds. Michelle, I know that you have more than 25 years of experience in broadcasting and production in Canada. Tell us about your role at Knowledge Network and how you got there.
Sure. So I'm president and CEO at Knowledge Network, which is British Columbia's public educational broadcaster and streamer. So my role is the creative leadership of the work that we do here. We broadcast first and foremost for British Columbians, a curated selection of the best in BC, Canadian, and programming from around the world that we curate with our audiences in BC, especially in mind. But we also think of ourselves as BC's gift to Canada, because on streaming, we're available across the entire country. And I guess my path here was a bit unconventional. I was actually on an academic path. I was doing a PhD, writing about 19th century Cuban nationalism, and fell into television. Worked at the Women's Television Network, quickly fell into a role where I was working with independents, commissioning original programming. From there, that led me to the CBC, the National Film Board, an Inuit television channel, Uvagoot TV, and now at Knowledge.
Wow, that's definitely impressive.
Quite a career shift. Mm-hmm. Ken, what about you? And for folks who aren't familiar, maybe you can share a little bit about what a production executive does and how your career brought you to Telus Originals.
So I'm on the Telus Originals team, part of the larger local content team here at Telus. And as a senior production executive here, I am meeting with filmmakers, connecting with them, and sometimes crafting their pitch, helping them answer any questions that they might have with that. And if they are to be selected, that I look after a portfolio of films and make sure that they're set up for success in all different ways, both in the pre-production, production, and post-production process, and make sure that they deliver the film that we were imagining and hoping to make together. So I've been at this role for 4 years now. But before that, I was one of the directors of the Vancouver International Film Festival on the industry side of things. And when I was there, all I would hear is, how can we get money for our films? Forget the craft, forget that we know how to do that, but how do we get funding for our films? So when this opportunity came up, it felt like such an exciting place to be because it's always been a passion of mine. So
I have a question for both of you, and you've obviously both been in the industry for a significant period of time. So I would love to hear your opinions on how the industry has evolved. Is it easier or harder to get greenlit at this point?
From my point of view, you know, I think that the streaming economy has really shifted how we really see finance structures, what's possible. I think that there was certainly a few years ago a lot more hope of getting streamers to support your film in some way, shape, or form at any point, whether it's on the distribution side or in the production side. And nowadays, it feels like that is evolving and changing. Finally, I think that after the pandemic, there is a shift away from the scale and size of festivals. They have shrunk. They've had to adapt to the times. I think that people still incredibly value the experience of that, audiences and filmmakers alike, and also a great place to find distribution as well. But the ability to get into a festival may have shifted as well. It's really sized down a little bit. But Michelle, I'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you've said, Ken. And I think, you know, there've always been challenges with this industry, but, you know, things shift according to the time that we're in. Like when I started, people were still shooting on Betacam, right? One of those cameras costs like $150,000 or $200,000. I forget how much. But production, like there was a huge barrier, right?
Yeah.
To access for most people. So many people had the talent and the stories they wanted to tell, but there were just a few doors that you could go through to get access to those means of production. But then like Hi8 came in the mid 90s and that was revolutionary. And now you can make a movie on your phone, right? And as Ken was talking about YouTube, it's so accessible. But the problem is the business models, right? Like the business models have all been shaken by the shift to digital. It is so easy to tell stories and make stories, but it's really hard to make a living doing it. But on the other side, because of shifts in technology, it is so accessible. A phone is almost as accessible as pen and paper. So people who have that visual sensibility and that drive to tell audiovisual stories, it's never been easier or more accessible for people to just pick up a device and do it. You don't have to wait for permission.
Now let's get into the nitty-gritty of pitching itself. I'd love to give our listeners and viewers some inside tips and tricks on what you've learned throughout your career. So first, tell us about the pitch process at the Knowledge Network. How does it usually play out?
So first off, full disclosure, I'm not frontline for pitches, but I have a team who do that. And we make it a pretty low bar to access. So we accept pitches year round. First step is often just going online to the producer section of our website, knowledge.ca/producers. There you'll find an overview of who we are and how we work, the kinds of pitches we accept. For example, we commission original documentaries, but not any drama, not any lifestyle, not any factual series. So you get kind of the lay of the land there and what it is we need to see. Also an invitation to watch some of the programming. So you get a sense of our vibe and our tone and our feel. And then once you've kind of read through all of that and you're like, yep, my project is in the zone, then you can write that up and send that through the portal. Or if you're like, you know, I really want to speak to a human, you reach out to Nikki Beasley, who is our first point of contact, and just, you know, talk it through with her and say, you know, am I in the zone? Is this right? Or I didn't quite understand this on your website. Our team are frequently at, you know, different events about town at DOXA or events maybe held by the Documentary Organization of Canada. So there's lots of networking, informal opportunities to meet people. But the formal pitching is usually done in writing, but really open to those conversations so that people can get a feel for us and to start to develop those human relationships, which are so essential. And something that I always like to remind emerging producers of is this is a relationship-based industry. And even if the first project that you're bringing forward doesn't get off the ground with the folks you were really hoping to back your project, think about it as a long-term relationship and really prioritize that, because if you stick in this industry, you're going to be crossing paths with people for 10, 20, 30 years, however long you stick around. And these are lifelong, career-long relationships. So really focus on that. Don't become so tunnel vision that it's just about this one project. Listen to what you're hearing about why this project is or isn't a fit right now. And then, you know, it might be the next project, right? But as you grow in that understanding of what people are looking for,
yeah,
you'll learn how to tailor your pitch for the needs of each specific broadcaster or streamer or whoever that client is.
I think that's great advice. As I like to say, it's not a no, it's a not right now.
Exactly. 100%.
And what about yourself, Ken?
Well, Michelle, very similar, really, truly very, very, very similar in that we encourage people to really look at our producer guidelines, visit our website on telus.com and get familiar with our submission guidelines and things like that. I would say the key difference for us is that we have an intake period. And so that's the time in which someone can submit their pitch to us. I totally agree with you, Michelle, on making sure that people do get a chance to talk to us, that these are relationship-based conversations that we have. And a lot of the time when we see a submission, there's a lot of things that don't get a chance to really translate on the page. And so to get some familiarity with it can be incredibly valuable. So we hold meetings and office hour slots, so to speak, to give producers a chance to engage with us and just sort of have conversations with us. So yeah, very, very similar.
What are some of the common mistakes that you see creators or filmmakers make when they are pitching their projects to you?
Yeah, I'd say the most common one is people not understanding who they're pitching to. So just doing that basic homework that we were talking about is looking at the producer guidelines, and everybody has those these days, and really understanding what fits for the organization that you're pitching to. And then the second one that you see a lot is people will pitch a topic instead of a story.
Right.
And obviously, we're looking for what is the story that you want to tell and what is your way into that story and trace that out. And sometimes people get stuck on the topic itself.
I agree with Michelle. I think that a lot of folks, they don't have an opportunity to really dig into our areas of focus. And that could be really challenging, but also really be caught in the cause. When we see a pitch, we're really reading a cause and not necessarily any of the kind of attachments that they might have in a sense of like the subjects that are going to let them in on the story, or maybe perhaps having too many subjects as well. Sometimes it's so much more valuable when it's focused on one or two people or one or two things and really just honing in on that. So there's that opportunity to grow and develop when people refine their pitches as well.
How important is the creator's connection to the subject matter of the project that they're pitching?
Oh, it's huge. That connection is huge. That's everything. And it's something that, yeah, that we're looking for. What is your connection to the story? And ask people to do that soul searching, right?
Yes.
Why are you the right person to be telling that story? And that is absolutely foundational, because sometimes people find a great story, they recognize, you know, the value of that story, that interest, and it is an act of humility to then ask yourself, but am I the right person? Do I have a lived connection? Do I have a lived experience? What makes me the proper person to do all of that work to represent that story, the community that it's connected to? And if it's not you, to step aside and create that space for somebody else, the right person to be telling that story.
I totally agree with you, Michelle. I think that that is foundational and essential. It's also exciting because it then begs the question, well, who is eligible to be telling the story? Who is really the one to tell that story, which really does open up some exciting questions and things like that. But I also think that there's also a question that we always ask, which is about time. Is there enough time to tell this whole story? I'm not talking about screen time, but production time for this story to properly unfold so that it's not being rushed or forced. You know, we are at the end of the day dealing with real life here to some degree. And so making sure that there is enough space and time for that story to really grow and change into a way that we all want to see and that the filmmaker and producers want to see as well is also essential.
So now it's time to take a quick break from the serious stuff for a little segment we've decided to call Pitched or Ditched.
Without naming any names, we want you to tell us your best or worst pitch you've ever seen and what made it so memorable.
Oh my, this is going back, so I don't think anyone will recognize themselves. But this was, I don't know if it's worst, but it's like most bizarre. When I was at WTN, we did a lot of lifestyle programming. And someone was pitching a wedding series, and I came back from lunch and there was a one pager on my desk. And this is also kind of a classic thing of what not to do. People often invest a lot of money in graphic design, but there's no content, right? It looks beautiful and there's no content. And this was that pitch. So there was a one page with nothing on the page, but a pretty page. And it came with a 3-layer wedding cake.
No way.
Still to this day, probably the most beautiful cake I have ever seen. And it was a Friday afternoon, and we were too small an office to indulge in this cake. And we felt this sense of responsibility. We had this beautiful thing, and we didn't have a proper purpose to put it to. So we started calling around, and we found a community church, and there was a lesbian couple that was celebrating their 50th anniversary. Oh. So we donated it to the church for the, like, they were renewing their vows. And so
that's so sweet.
We did that. But yeah, it was just kind of a masterclass in what not to do with a pitch.
That's a hard act to follow, Michelle. I don't know. I mean, I'd love a cake or two, honestly. You know, I would say, I won't get into any specifics, but there have been many cases, as we say, being out in the field at an industry event, and you sort of get cornered into a producer who's just really wanting to talk to you, and that rapid fire of, okay, how about this one? How about that one? And you're sort of just staying there for quite a long time, looking around, being like, can someone please help me? Can I get a hand over here and trying to get out of it? But you got to give respect to a person who has that many ideas. But, you know, like at the same time, you're just like, wow, you're just hitting me with all of these things. You're just peppering me. I got to move on. But thank you so much. Like, okay, well, how about one more. Yeah. You know, it just never really ends, does it?
I was literally passed a pitch document underneath a bathroom stall at the Banff Media Festival.
Now we want to help our audience avoid ending up on anyone's ditch list. So let's dig deeper into the do's and don'ts of crafting the perfect pitch. Now, how carefully should a creator consider their finances and their budgetary needs when crafting their pitch?
Start with story, right? And I think the first piece of advice for me, and we're more focused on the documentary space, but be real. Like, be really real. And the projects that come from a place of passion and that kind of obsession where someone is just so motivated and engaged around a story and they have something that they want to share, those are hands down almost always the best pitches, right? But once you have that story, that ground, yeah, you really need, like, we'll work with you to help you on the budget and help you understand the tax credit piece and is it eligible for CMF right. and do we have envelope mm-hmm. that we can put into it and what are the other funds that you can go out to? We want to see that you have that expertise on your team. So if that's not your expertise, think about, you know, who are you going to bring on to help you with that piece? But it really is first and foremost about the story, and we can work with you to help build that budget and that financing scenario. We do need to see that you know what you're doing, but don't worry that it's not fully baked. It doesn't need to be fully baked when it comes to us.
I'm saying this a lot today, but Michelle, really agreeing with you here. I also think that the budget tells a story as well, and an initial budget does tell a story. Have you allowed enough days for yourself? Do you have enough time in the edit room to like put that all together? So in a lot of ways, it is about being realistic. I totally agree, Michelle. I think that there are some producers go, well, what's the budget range? What's the sweet spot? You know, and working backwards from there doesn't really work. It really starts with those aspects first. So
Ken, on that note, then just to sort of sum up everything that we talked about today, what would a perfect pitch look like to you?
As our listeners lean in,
I think that,
turn the volume up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a perfect pitch in my end, clearly developed. It is also honed in so that it's not 45 pages long, that it really does get down to the baselines of your logline synopsis. The logline is an actual logline. You know, yeah. It's not just an extended synopsis here. You know, that it really does drill down and feel like you have the subjects in place, that you've clearly seen the intersections of our areas of focus and what we can do within the regions in which we support. And also be really clear about what you're looking for and your timelines for all of that. It's so important for us to really understand the doability of a project and know that you've thought it all through.
Michelle, is that similar for you? Are there things that you would look for differently in a perfect pitch?
So I get to say at this time, I agree with everything that Ken just said. Yeah, and less is more. Less is definitely more, because that actually shows that the person's really thought it through and they can distill that into the perfect pitch. I'd say we're also always looking for, you know, like there are no new stories in some sense, right? Romeo and Juliet love stories, they've been told, you know, like a bazillion times over since the dawn of humanity. Mm-hmm. So it's also about perspective, right? Like what is your original perspective, the little new light that you are shining on this story that gives the reader at this stage, because it's a pitch, that tap on the shoulder. And it's like, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way before, right? And that's the little hook that brings you in. So always looking for that hook, that originality in the perspective and the approach, and building on something Ken said earlier. If it is a first-time director, for example, looking at the team around them, I think the trickiest projects to back sometimes are like emerging director, emerging editor, emerging cinematographer, because it's new. It's the blind leading the blind, right? So if it's emerging director, having a more senior cinematographer and an editor, that helps to give confidence that that person, as Ken said, is set up for success.
I was curious, for our listeners and viewers, could you provide places where they could maybe learn more? Or are there any resources you'd recommend that they check out to help hone their pitch?
Yeah, I think some great resources. The Documentary Organization of Canada is a national organization, but they have chapters right across the country. So here in BC, there's the Doc Northwest chapter, which just does awesome work. They have lots of networking events, other events that are based at skills development and helping to build community and connections. The CMPA also in BC has a BC chapter. They have a lot of great programs and networking events. The National Screen Institute, for example, has a BIPOC access program that is accessible to emerging creators, producers from across the country. So really to look at the different programs, like look at the Black Screen Office, look at the Indigenous Screen Office, look at Black Film and TV. Yeah. There's so many different organizations. Whistler Film Festival has a fantastic doc lab program that they run every year. So there's a lot of them that are out there to help people find their feet.
I think that those programs are really important in sort of like softer social ways, where you're really then engaging with other producers and getting a sense of what has worked for them, what hasn't worked for them, and building that community and just being a part of the community. But I also think that you just got to do the pitch. Mm-hmm. You just got to try, because if it's too precious with it, and it's got to work the first time, it might not. And as Michelle and Jen said, you know, it's like, not this time, but maybe next time. Mm-hmm. But it's important to just go and give it a shot, because if you don't give it a shot, you won't know and you won't learn. And I think that's really, you know, depending on the commissioner or funder, if there's an opportunity to take a meeting afterward as a postmortem to see what worked and what didn't, or ask that question,
yep,
you might not get an answer, but I think it's worth asking. You know, I think it is really worth, yep, asking, because it is a learning process and practice makes perfect, I think.
Thank you so much for the advice and the resources, both of you. I want to thank you so much for sharing your experience and expertise with us today on First Frame.
Thanks, both of you. It's been fun.
Thank you so much.
Jen, this conversation was definitely packed with helpful advice. Is there any big takeaway that you've taken from today's conversation?
Well, one, I would say that I think the conversation is going to be so amazingly helpful for anyone who is new and emerging and trying to sort of refine the pitch process. But, you know, really what I heard from both of them was, do your homework. Make sure you understand the organization that you are pitching to. What are they looking for? What have they asked for? Make sure you're reading all the information that they provide to you. It's there for a reason. And really put your story first.
And the thing that stuck out for me is, we've heard many times on various episodes now about relationships and this being a relationship industry.
Yes.
And so for me, it would be like, if you're going out and doing those pitches, because you're going to be going and doing a lot of them,
yeah,
don't burn any bridges. The pitch may be a no right now, but it could be a yes at a later date.
Exactly. That's it for this episode of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. Thanks so much to you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us.
Please hit the follow button below so you don't miss a single episode. And be sure to tune in next time when we kick off our two-part deep dive into Canadian funding landscape.
If you'd like to learn more about how Tell a Story Hive can help you along your content creation journey, be sure to check out storyhive.com. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. That's a wrap.